to Shoot From the Hoop, where we discuss all things feed, pass, and sporting clays. My name is Jeff Jensen. I'm the host of the podcast, and I'm really, really excited today to introduce our guest, Brian Ducaney. Brian, welcome to Shoot From the Hoop.
Thank you very much for having me, Jeff. It's an honor to be here, and congratulations on your great podcast and success that you're having.
Well, so far, so good. I only have like 25 episodes, but it's been well-received, Brian.
Yes, I understand. Well,
you are a two-time FITASC world champion. We're about 10 days out from the Portugal World Championship, the 48th Sporting FITASC Championship. It was just outside of Portugal. And you had also won a world championship as a senior. It was 13 years ago in Spain.
Yeah, as a veteran.
I think you were a veteran in those days. Right. Yeah. So you're a two-time world champion. And I also will make note that in sporting clays, you've gotten bronze medals at world events in England and in Texas.
San Antonio. Yeah.
So we'll talk a little bit about sporting clays and FITASC as we go. But let's reflect back on the trip to Portugal a couple weeks ago, Brian. I knew you were going in there. You were well trained, ready to go. What were your thoughts going into the competition and getting over to Portugal?
Well, to back up a little, Jeff, to tell you the truth, I nearly never made it because I had a few hiccups before I left town. I pulled out my left shoulder for some reason that had never happened to me before, so I had to get some serious therapy. My dog died, and I had a couple little family problems. I nearly never made it. If it wasn't for my wife, I wouldn't have gone. You know, I was kind of shaken up. But once I get over there and I'm settled, I get settled in real fast and I step up to the occasion. But I nearly never got on the plane, tell you the truth. So it's one of those stories that really played out with a nice ending.
Wow, like storybook ending, Brian. You know, for our listeners or viewers that aren't familiar with traveling overseas, it's as hard to get over there and navigate gun permits and things as it is to shoot the event.
Exactly. And airline problems and civil servants when you get over there to deal with the paperwork and waiting and lines. And I'm somewhat an impatient person. I like to get things done efficiently. But all in all, I must say, as I remember, the people in Portugal are very nice people. Everybody's very courteous in Portugal. We have to give them their due. But you go ahead.
Well, it's also a unique environment, Brian, because we stayed at the hotel with the Team USA. So everybody that you would see down at the restaurant for breakfast, in the bar, in the food areas, is almost like a community of Americans.
Yes. And everybody there was pretty much there for one reason. You know, the vast majority, they were there to put up a show. So there was a lot of tension in those ballrooms and dining rooms and hallways.
Well, there was. You could see. So to give a little picture of the shoot, it's a 200 target event. It's shot over 4 days. Each day, the competitors shoot 50 targets on two parkours. Walk us through your event, Brian. I mean, you started off well, and then in the last day, you were one target behind a Portuguese shooter, and you were set up to shoot two of the harder parkours, if I remember correctly, and you delivered. So can you kind of play us through the tournament?
Well, a little luck is always a good thing, you know? And both occasions when I've won, I've come from behind on the last day. I've won it on the last day. I've always been tied or behind first, second, and third day. And the fourth day, I really come through. But all in all, I'm a competitor. So each day, I actually get better. The first day was my weakest, Jeff. I let go a few targets, and I had a little bad luck on the first day. But I let it go, and the second day, I was strong. There were two competitors, one from America and one from England that I was afraid of. And after the second day, they weren't doing too well, unfortunately. And, you know, the third day, I didn't realize this Portugal guy was doing so well. But I could see it in my wife's face that she wasn't happy. And she was telling me that we need to step it up. And this guy was on a different rotation to me. So I'm not sure what was really happening or what. But Anyway, come the last day, we had Shedite and Beretta to shoot, which were two formidable parkours, especially both of the last pegs on both of them were over the top. Anyway, I put up a good score on the first one, a 22, which was just solid on Shedite. And, you have a break of an hour and a half, and I kept my cool, and I started off Beretta a little weak. I let go a rabbit that I shouldn't have let go. Because you need to understand, you have to miss some of these big birds and don't let it get to you, but you can't afford to give away one or two unnecessarily of the nicer ones, you know? So that rabbit upset me a little bit, but I ran the second peg and I ran the third peg in Beretta. So I know I was back in business for the last peg, which would we know was going to be the big, big one. And people had been talking and talking about this the whole weekend. And I got of those six birds, I think I got three or four. So that was fantastic, you know? So I finished up the day strong, and just with a little luck and the Lord's blessing, at 4:30, I heard the good news that I'd won by three targets, which is a formidable win at this level of shooting. So it worked out for me. Again.
I have a few questions to ask you, Brian. You said that you were able to keep your cool. It's hard to keep your cool when you're in the heat of battle, but also when we have that delay between parkours. How do you keep your mind occupied? What are you thinking about, or what are you doing during that break?
Well, you just try to rest your eyes and rest your body, because it becomes physical and mental endurance. And I always have a way of, when I get back into the peg, I turn it on again. Like everything lights up, the focus comes back. Absolute, serious focus, target focus. And that's really what has always brought me through in FITAS, because it's so little repetition and you have to analyze these birds so quickly. A lot of them are going through the trees, or there's definitely an optimum spot to initially seat and where to kill it. And, you know, where you hold your gun is so important. The speed of these targets, you really, sometimes you only got one really optimum spot. And you just have to rise back to the, wake up after the delay in between. You wake up real fast, the adrenaline gets going, and everything seems to come together for the most part. Right. And if you make a mistake, you just have to work on letting it go.
Yeah. I remember you and I have shot together for many years. And when we came up against hard targets, you always used to say, let's get our share. You're not going to hit them all.
Just get our share. Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. I have a question about FITASC. You know, FITASC is considered one of the more difficult shotgun sports, perhaps the most difficult. What are your thoughts about the FITASC events and the structure of the events, and why is it considered the ultimate test in shotgun shooting?
Well, that's a big question, but definitely it's the ultimate in shotgun sports, in my opinion. It's a real test of somebody who knows how to control a shotgun, because there's so much variety of the target. Sometimes you have to make a slow move, sometimes you have to make a fast move, sometimes you have to come from under, behind, all different things depending on the target. These target setters are serious, and a lot of the birds are big in a sense that they have distance and speed. Over there, for the most part in Europe, when they have an event, all the real estate is just for the world championship, for the eight parkours. It's not squeezed in. So generally speaking, you get a lot of big crosses, things coming down from a hill, coming down on you. You see them for a long time, some of them. And it's just a wide, wide variety. And you really have to analyze them quickly. And you can, as I say, you have to kind of watch them coming through the trees a little bit, which I was a bird hunter for many years in Jamaica. That's where I'm originally from. And South America. I know you were with me once. And that has helped me to hunt. When you go to Europe, you have to hunt these. A lot of these targets have to be hunted. And they're well set. And you ask why the structure and the way it's the program, it's only 50 birds a day, which people will say is not enough. But you and me know that when you finish the 50 birds, you're drained. If you put in the effort to work at these 50 birds and walk these hills and all these pegs and the dust and the maybe somewhat say lack of facilities and the waiting game, you're drained. You're physically drained. So it's two parkours a day. Each parkour is, you know, with four pegs. So it's just eight pegs. But it's a lot of variety, very little repetition, and you got to be on your A game. To put up a show, you got to be on your A game.
Yeah, you do. You know, it's interesting, Brian. You're right. Because there's lack of repetition, you see targets. You have to make a quick decision on how you're going to approach that target.
Exactly.
And, you know, fortunately, our groups are groups of six, right? We call it a squad. And who are you shooting with? What countries were people from when your squad?
I had a great squad. And from I got my card the night before, I knew I got lucky. And I had two guys from Great Britain, one from Italy, one from Spain, and a nice young lady, Bianca, from Australia. I always try and latch on to one or two guys that is a good shot, a nice guy. I see how he moves the gun, stuff like that. And I locked on to a guy named John Kendall from Great Britain. John Kendall. He's a good shot and he was very nice to me. And I watched him. And I was behind him, so I could feel the emotion and how the move to the target and stuff like that. Little things like that helps you to win a tournament. What would you call that? The eye of the tiger, or being alert, or taking every opportunity you can, you know, to make opportunities for yourself. I watched this guy, John Kendall, after the first parkour. I know this was a guy I was hooking up with. So that's kind of it, you know.
So I have a question for you, Brian. One would think that when you've been around the shooting world as much as you have and you've won a world championship, that it would be, you wouldn't get nervous or you wouldn't have anxiety. But that's not the case, right? To perform your best, you are nervous in those situations.
Definitely. I get nervous 2, 3, 4 weeks, maybe even 2 months before I go to the shoot is when I get the jitters, so to speak. For the most part, when I get onto the stand to shoot, I'm so focused and intense and concentrating. Everything is there, working, that the nerves kind of go away. I go into a little bit of a zone or my own little feelings, and generally I stay that way right through the day.
Oh, that's great.
But well, my jitters are at night. My jitters are at night or the day before. What can I tell you, right?
Yeah, but when you're executing, you're dialed in.
Exactly. Yeah.
All right. I have another question for you, Brian. Why is it so hard for Americans to go overseas and win? I mean, it's hard to win in Europe or in Great Britain. The quality of the shooters is, of course, intense and immense. But what are your thoughts on competing overseas and the challenges?
That's a good question, a big question. Up to about 10, 12 years ago, the Americans weren't winning. When I won my veterans, that was a huge, huge win 13 years ago, because we weren't winning then. No, we're winning maybe 40% of everything. We're doing fantastic. But in those days, we weren't winning. But those guys over there are seasoned shooters. In many ways, they're a little tougher than us. Accustomed to, they don't have golf carts over there at their regular shoot, so they're accustomed to hiking it and carrying their own stuff and their ammunition. And they're just a little rougher and tougher than us, to tell the truth. And they're accustomed to quality targets. Sometimes the referees in America, I think, are a little softer. You know, sometimes I've seen shooters take advantage of quartering away targets and trap targets. They move a little too fast. They say pull and they start to move, and it annoys the hell out of me, to tell you the truth. And it's gotten worse in recent years. But over in Europe, they either respect it, the rules, better, or they know the referees are watching them. I don't know. So they don't mess around with that early mounting on quartering and trap birds. And I just think over there it's a little harder. Everything is a little harder. It's long days. It's dusty. You never know what the weather is going to give you, whether it's the wind or a little rain sometime or the mud. You know, I mean, old time days in Italy and France, we've had some messy days. England, messy days. It's just harder going, Tarnseco, harder going. And it's good quality targets, really good quality targets. And everything is a little more formal or structured with the referees, I think.
Well, I agree. Yep. The other thing for our listeners and people watching this video, in FITASC, you've got to have a low gun. The gun has to be all right around the nipple line, give or take, 25 centimeters from the shoulder. And when you're set and you call pull, you can't move the gun until you see the target.
You're not supposed to.
Supposed to. That's my point. That's why you're saying some people move early.
Yeah.
But for some of those targets, you say pull and you could hear the trap, but you don't see the target for a little bit. And you got to really get your timing down and things. Otherwise, you run the risk of having a foul call.
Yeah. Or some of those birds are so big in Europe. You see coming off of one mountain coming across another range, another mountain range.
Yes.
So if you mount too early, it's bad business too. You don't even want to mount early. Let the bird come. Let the bird work and come into your range. You don't want to get hooked up with it too early because your eyes will fizzle out on you.
It's so true. It's hard to appreciate that unless you've done it. But if you hang on to a bird too long, it's like you can't keep your focus.
Exactly. Yeah.
So Brian, I have another question for you. How have these targets evolved at the World Championships over the years? When did you do your first FITASC World Championship?
Oh, I went to Australia, I think was my first world championship. I don't remember when, but like 15 years ago, place in Warrnambool. It was okay. The weather was terrible, but it was okay. But how they have evolved, they've gotten harder.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah, the targets have gotten, everywhere in America, everywhere the targets have gotten harder. But in Europe, they've gotten harder. But they're not dumb. You know, sometimes you can set a dumb target, a pure edge, and you don't really get enough time to make a nice, proper move on it. In Europe, they've just gotten smarter and maybe a little more distance, but they're still good targets. Maybe just a little more distance and speed have made it more difficult, you know? The scores are probably down in the last 12 years. I'd have to say, for even a better shooter, a better grade shooter, the scores are down 12 targets in 200.
Right.
As much as that.
Well, it's a fine line for the target setters to set a challenging target and still allow the shooter to beat themselves, right? Because anybody can set a target that nobody can hit. Speed,
exactly.
Edge. So I agree with you. I think that the target setters have been doing a phenomenal job. And Jamie Peckham, he's done a few world championships now.
He does a good job.
Yep.
He certainly does a very good job.
Brian, let me shift gears to sporting clays because you've won two bronze world championship shoots. You've won the bronze medal twice. For our listeners, what's the difference in terms of difficulty between shooting FITASC or shooting more of a repetitive set of targets where you shoot the same pair three times?
Well, in Europe, to the best of my knowledge, they don't even shoot sporting clays.
Right.
So to the extent that they actually call FITASC sporting, that's sporting targets, sporting clays, is FITASC in Europe. So in America, they evolve sporting clays, maybe say four pairs, as you know, on a peg. And it's a lot more repetition. And more the targets have become true pairs to push people through, I think, at these big tournaments. And sometimes they're a little bit of a very quick. You don't have much time on them. It's like spot shooting nearly. Sometimes it's not good for us older guys to have to shoot so quickly on the true pairs. But that's life in the tropics, you know? That's what it has evolved into in America. I'm not sure if that answers your question.
It does. But if you're given an option, and I know the answer to this, between shooting a FITASC tournament and shooting a sporting clays tournament, what are you choosing?
The only disadvantage of FITASC is it takes a little longer.
Fair.
But the targets are better. The move you can make on the targets are more sophisticated, in my opinion. And the target setters just set better birds, better targets, and hardly any repetition. So you have to analyze quickly. And, you know, some of us have problems shooting four pairs of the same thing, repeating. After a while, they kind of lose the enthusiasm for this third pair and the fourth pair. In fetus, it's like a fresh thing every time. It's a fresh thing. Every peg you go to is a nice little scenery, a new scenery. Sometimes it's down in a valley. Sometimes it's with some bushes. Sometimes it's completely out in the open. It's refreshing, fetus, refreshing.
I have a question for you, Brian. So when I shoot fetus, and I've learned this over the years, when I first started shooting, I didn't have a library bank. I hadn't seen all the targets I was about to shoot. But the more you shoot, the more you recognize patterns of targets and the move you're going to make and where you're going to break it, to your point earlier, and where you can see it. Have you gotten better in fetus over the years?
I've gotten older and I don't see as well and I don't move quite as fast and the balance is struggling a little bit from time to time. So it's hard to say that I've gotten better, but I've gotten smarter in some ways, you know. I've gotten a little smart in my middle age or old age. So I still analyze targets very, very well, maybe better now than ever. Mm-hmm. And little things don't get to me anymore. Generally speaking, I don't make the referees, especially in Europe, get to me, because I think they're doing a top-notch job. They really do a top-notch job in Europe. And I don't make them ruffle my feathers. And you never know what squad mates you're getting, which is good and bad. And it can actually be good, because you don't feel that you have any obligation to the squad mates, because they're not your personal friends or something, that you have to help them. Right. So all in all, I kind of like the situation with the fetus. You're more into yourself and into your game and focus on the targets.
Well, I ask because I think shooting smarter is something that helps us as we get older. You get more experience, and sometimes it's not pure athleticism. I mean, you can go out and win a fetus event in the United States, in a local event. You're shooting against shooters that might be 30 years younger than you. Right, or 40 years young. I think there's a lot to be said for fetus and the skill set and the planning. And I just think smarter is probably better. Can I shift gears a little bit, Brian? You've been shooting a long time. Do you know how many registered targets you've shot for sporting clays?
I'm not sure, you know, but I think a few years ago at San Antonio, they gave me a prize for 200,000.
I thought.
Yeah.
That's a lot of registered targets, Brian.
That's a lot of time, energy, and money.
To say the least, right?
Yeah. That must have been 5-7 years ago, too, you know?
Right. Well, I knew that you'd been up around 200,000, and it doesn't surprise me that you're over 200,000. Anyways, I'm going to tell a quick story, Brian, about when you and I first met. I had moved to Miami. I took a position at the university, and on Saturday mornings, Markham Park had a little five stand. And it was the middle of summer, and only two people would show up before they opened, you and me.
Okay.
And you didn't know me, and I didn't know you, so I kind of felt like I was impinging on your space. But as we shot a few weeks in a row, we'd shoot from different areas, and you kind of let me tag along and give me pointers. And I love this story because I remember it like it was yesterday. I asked you one day if you would help me with a couple, you know, kind of coach me up a little bit. And you said, well, I only coach people that are very serious. And I said, well, I just had a pallet of shells delivered. Is that serious enough?
I don't remember that, but very good.
And you and I shot together in Florida for many years. I mean, we've traveled to tournaments and all over the place. But one of the things I was going to mention is you and I, about 10 years ago, went to Paraguay and shot pigeons. That was an incredible experience.
Yeah, not only was it fantastic shooting, but to make it relevant to fetus and your podcast, I think shooting birds and doves over the years actually helps you, because it makes you see what the target is doing, you know?
Right. And
it makes you react quickly. You're hunting the target. Because nearly every bird is a different target.
Yep.
The flight pattern is different.
I didn't think it was possible to get like a rash from the stock, but I had one on my shoulder. We were shooting so much.
Yeah, well, if I remember rightly, you got the best spot the first morning. You got the best spot.
That was incredible with the Bird Boys. And if you hit four in a row, they'd yell quattro, you know, if you hit four targets in one setting. And yeah, it was just, it was a phenomenal experience.
That was Picazura pigeon, a huge, strong pigeon in Paraguay. Absolutely fantastic hunting. Yep, I remember now. Yep.
And you learn so much because remember we were out there and the doves were flying and then the doves would stop flying and then the pigeons would start flying. I was like, how does everybody know all this, you know?
Oh, well, that's true. But the pigeon was like about five times the size of the dove, really.
Oh, yeah. So everybody came away happy. The farmers got their pigeons killed that were eating their peanuts. We got to shoot birds. And then at the end of the day, we were packaging everything up in burlap bags and giving it to the natives.
Exactly. Nothing wasted. Nothing wasted.
No, that was just outstanding. Anyways,
we retrieved everything. We picked up and retrieved every bird we shot.
Yep, absolutely. Yep. So I have a question for you, Brian. What's the future of VTASC and Sporting Clays? Where can we go from where we are now?
I'm not sure if I qualify to answer that one, Jeff. And you didn't give me the questions before this podcast. You know, that's a hard one to answer. It's political. And unfortunately, America and the clubs, I have to be honest, America and the clubs like the business of sporting clay. VTASC is a little slower and it's not a money spinner. And I think that's sometimes take a toll on the sport. But, you know, but maybe I shouldn't say too much more on that subject.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, Brian, I remember when you and I used to shoot together, we'd go to a regional, we'd fly to Texas or Arizona or something and shoot a regional. We'd shoot the regional sporting and we'd shoot a 200 bird World VTASC. And now the World VTASC or the World Cup events aren't affiliated with the regionals. So you got to make extra trips if you want to shoot them.
Exactly. And it's a hustle. It takes up a lot of time and energy and things like that.
Absolutely.
VTASC has its work cut out for them in America, unfortunately.
I agree.
But although I love the game, and I think the whole concept is absolutely fantastic and the ultimate, as I said, the ultimate in shooting sports, in controlling a shotgun, I just think VTASC has its future cut out in America, unfortunately.
Oh, interesting. All right, well, we'll keep an eye on that. For our listeners, Brian, I was just going to ask you a couple questions, like what gun do you shoot?
Well, I've always shot a Krieghoff, you know. Old time days, I used to use a shotgun because I used to just do bird shooting, a Beretta 390. And then when a friend took me to Markham Park one Saturday afternoon and I was hooked right away, I figured this game needed two shots, you know, over and under. And I bought myself a Krieghoff and I've always been very, very close to them and they've been very nice to me and I think it's a great shotgun. But there's lots of good guns out there, really. The guns and the ammunition have come a far way.
You know, I've always admired your desire to get better because even after you won the world championship in Spain in 2013, your quest to get better led to changing your shotgun, right?
To change in the shotgun?
Yeah, you went to the parkour, if I remember.
Oh, well, yes. But as I picked up that parkour, you know, I remember Phil Krieghoff, Dieter had it in Chicago at Brett's, at maybe a world sporting that Brett had in Chicago. And it was the first one to come to America. And as I held it up, I said, this is a gun. It was much lighter and handled so well. I needed one right away. That's right.
Oh, yeah. Very good. Yeah. So what shells do you like to shoot? What speed, what size, things like that?
Well, unfortunately, I'm a little hooked in the old-fashioned way. I still like 1300, but more and more I see people going to 1250 and 1200 and they say that's all you need and guaranteed that's all you need, but I can't let it go. What can I tell you?
That's all right.
So I need 1300. I
love it. So what size? Do you shoot all 7.5s or do you mix up 7.5s and 8s?
7.5 and 8s. Okay. Pretty much 50-50.
All right. Yeah. Sounds good. Brian, I want to thank you for making time. I know we're fresh off the world. We didn't want to push this interview out too far. So thank you so much for joining me today in the middle of the day. I really appreciate it. I'm sure everybody will love your insights on competition in Europe and what it takes to be at the top level.
Thank you for having me, Jeff. This is wonderful, and you do a great job on Shoot From the Hoop. Fantastic name and podcast. Good luck to you.
All right. Thank you so much, Brian. Thank you. And to all of our listeners out there, if you're listening on Apple or Spotify, please give us a 5-star rating, and if possible, leave a comment. If you're watching on YouTube, by all means, become a subscriber. I will continue to bring interesting stories and sporting clays and feet tasks to the podcast. I'm not sure they're going to get much better than one of our most recent world champions, Brian Ducaney. Thanks again for joining me.
Thank you, Jeff. Take care of yourself.
Right. Bye-bye. All right. Bye-bye now.